Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Harinam Namaskritya. Haram Chaiva Narottama. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Jaya Madhiraye Nasta Preshavadishu Nityam Bhagavata Sevayat Bhagavatitam Shloke Bhaktir Bhavitina Ishtiki. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, the fourth canto, 28th chapter, text 4. Tayo Payud Yavana Sarvato Disham Dvarbi Pravishya Subrisham Dvarbi Pravishya Subrisham Pradavan Sakalam Purim Pradavan Sakalam Purim Tayo Pabuj Yamanam. I'm sorry. Tayo Pabuj Yamanam Vai. Yavana Sarvato Disham. Dvarbi Parvishya Subrisham Ardayan Sakalam Purim Tvayopabhuvya Yamanam Vai Yavana Sarvato Disham Dvarbi Pravishya Subrisham Ardayan Sakalam Purim. Tayo Prabhuja Manamai Yavana Sarvato Disham Dvarbi Pravishya Subrisham Shubhisham. Taya by Kalakanya. Upab Vuj Yamanam. Being taken possession of. By certainly. Yavana, the Yavanas. Sarvata Disham, from all sides. Dvarvi, through the gates. Pravishya, having entered. Subrisham, greatly. Pradayan, giving trouble. Sakalam, all over. Purim, the city. Translation: when Kalakanya, the daughter of time, attacked the body, the dangerous soldiers of the king of the Yavanas entered the city through different gates. They then began to give severe trouble to all the citizens. Repeating: when Kalakanya, daughter of time, attacked the body, the dangerous soldiers of the king of the Yavanas entered the city through different gates. They then began to give severe trouble to all the citizens. Purport, Srila Prabhupada. The body has 9 gates, the 2 eyes, 2 nostrils, 2 ears, mouth, rectum, and genitals. When one is harassed by the invalidity of old age, various diseases manifest in the gates of the body. For example, the eyes become dim, or so dim that one requires spectacles, and the ears become too weak to hear directly, and therefore one requires hearing aids. The nostrils are blocked by mucus, and one has to always sniff a medicinal bottle containing ammonia. Similarly, the mouth, too weak to chew, requires false teeth. The rectum also gives one trouble, and the evacuation process becomes difficult. Sometimes one has to take enemas, and sometimes use a surgical nozzle to accelerate the passing of urine. So some of us are there already, some of us are not there yet. Anyway, in this way, the king or the city of Paranjan was attacked by various gates, at various gates, by the soldiers. Thus in old age, all the gates of the body are blocked by so many diseases, and one has to take help from so many medicines and surgical appliances. Soma Ginati Mirandasya, Kiranjana Chakya Chaksurandalitam Yena Tashmai Sri Guru Namaha. So Srila Prabhupada's decline in health before his passing, or his death, or leaving his body, is an illustration of these verses. He wrote these verses probably at least 3-4 years before he passed away. But already he was having difficulty. At one point he had to go to England to have an operation to allow him to pass urine. He was having so much difficulty. He was describing the condition he'd shortly be in when he wrote these verses, or when he wrote the purport of this verse. At that time I was about 25 years old when I joined the movement, and I was 30 years old when Prabhupada left the planet. I remember the devotees who were with Prabhupada in his last years, as his health deteriorated, saying that Prabhupada said, "Don't think this won't happen to you." Of course, I was thinking, I was thin, energetic, 30 years old, incapacitation, the failing of my health, which I took for granted, and I considered it would be everlasting. It's just, this is me. I'll always be like this. But I, fortunately now, I'm this is me, and I won't always be like this. This is nice, but. But being immobile on a deathbed was inconceivable. And it still is. The total embarrassment of being helpless leads most people to a crushing despondency. When my grandfather, his wife died, my grandmother died about 6 months before he did. And he was so destitute. He was living in a nursing home, and he just simply stopped eating. He and just simply stopped eating. He was so unhappy and sad and depressed. So like that, things happen. We have no apprehension of how we might feel in that incapacitated position. Say so many people, they die of embarrassment at their disease. You get the disease, they're incapacitated. And the disease doesn't kill them, but their embarrassment kills them. But like that, I was thinking about this Prabhupada, how he passed away. Passed away a very painful, long-term illness, almost 6 months or something. He was bedridden, four months maybe he was bedridden. So Prabhupada could have passed away quietly in his sleep after a very vigorous day. He was a very vigorous person, very active, and did so many different things. He could have done it in so many different ways. He could have had sat in meditation, left his body after some days, after some time, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur did. Bhaktivinoda was just sitting in samadhi for several months. His son would come and dust him off. He just simply sat and chanted. Chanted silently, just kept his hand in his bead bag, his slight movement. Just taking no food, no water, like this. So, he could have done that. But instead he chose to illustrate the convictions that he'd realized under duress, under the duress of passing from this body. Death is not a fun adventure. I kind of kid myself thinking, well, it'd be very exciting, you know, but it's not a fun thing. It's not an adventure. It's a very humiliating thing. So instead, Prabhupada, he chose to teach each of us. He was a teacher, acharya. And this was his conclusion that this is what Krishna wanted. And his conclusion that Krishna was God and that Krishna could handle him any way that Krishna wanted to. And so he allowed Krishna to take him back to Godhead in what would be considered for most of us a very difficult, distraught situation. But Prabhupada, to his very last day, on the very last day, he was still translating Srimad Bhagavatam. He was completely dedicated to his mission. So Prabhupada had asked to be Krishna's puppet. Make me dance as you like. It's very difficult to read that sometimes without actually feeling extreme emotion, how great Prabhupada was, such a great person, simply throwing himself at the mercy of the Supreme Lord. The tendency in material life is if one becomes great, famous, whatever, he tends to think of himself in a grand way. Gets a little puffed up, as you say. But Prabhupada, of course, never did this. Prabhupada never became proud. And this is a great part of his teaching to us, his steadiness in the face of imminent death. I say imminent because none of us think we will die. It's inconceivable that we'll be removed from this body. After all, we are the body, right? We are this body. Take such good care of it. This is our main concern. You know, where will I eat? Where will I sleep? You know, travel comes up. The idea of travel comes up to me. It's, I don't want to travel. I have my little niche and I have my little routine and I know when I'm going to eat and I know where my bed is and so forth. Put myself in anxiety like that? Now how could we exist, however, without this body? We are the Atma, eternal souls, but Atma is also the body, it's also the mind. There's three Atmas. So the living entity gets confused. You know, which one am I? Which is me? In my old age, I'm so confused sometimes. That's why I have to write a script for every class. Because really, without the script, I'm lost. I'm just like thin. So thanks to Kali Kanya's embrace, she's often so gentle at first. We get hints. Kali Kanya is giving us a hint. She embraces. First thing she tends to embrace is the head, and the hair turns gray. So that's a very gentle, not so painful thing, but unless one is very vain. Anyway, in my case, it's very interesting. I had what they call salt and pepper hair, dark and gray, since I was 20 years old. It's very interesting. So it was not a big shock when my head turned white. At any rate, so Kali Kanya is coming, and she also now at this point she's embracing my knees. My knees are going. So I walk. So I exchange. But anyway, so this is, we're having this affair. Kalakanya and I are having an affair. It's an affair to remember, but we don't want to repeat the affair. We don't want to continue the affair for too long. Srila Prabhupada was like a godlike representative to us. He was one with us at the same time in our frailties. He demonstrated his frailty. And so much so that he could teach us how to leave this world, how to die. I remember my father, when I first joined the movement, my parents were concerned that I had joined a cult. So they came to visit me. And my father, the first question was, you don't think that this man, your teacher, is God, do you? Right? He was concerned like that. And I appreciated that, because probably when someone joined the movement at those times, they'd get a barrage of information from friends and relatives and so forth, telling them that this is a really bad thing that happened. So my father was a very pious person, though, and he actually did have a lot of faith in God. He believed in God, and he took shelter of God. So I told my dad, I said, no, he's not God. He doesn't say that he's God. He says he's the servant of God. So my father was completely satisfied that I had not been led astray. He could see that, you know, devotees were pious and serious, and it wasn't some bizarre cult. So he allowed me to go on without any struggle or difficulty. But Prabhupada had godlike qualities. He wasn't God, but he had godlike qualities. And by performing a miracle, how did he demonstrate that? He reversed our seemingly irreversible, unstoppable race to disgrace. That's where we're going. We're just completely, every day, more and more sinful activities. So he reversed this. He actually turned us around 180 degrees. That's a miracle. And he performed this miracle over 5,000 times, about 5,000 times. I think he had about 4,700 disciples that he initiated. And he still lives. His godlikeness is there. He still lives in his teachings. And he continues to perform this godlike miracle over and over again every day. Everywhere, people are taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada's teachings. They're being introduced by Krishna. And this is being performed, all this is being performed, the agency of the devotees who have accepted the responsibility to carry on the parampara by becoming gurus and teachers. It's also performed by the sankirtan devotees who give out his books, and the devotees who care for the deities, and the devotees who clean the temple, the devotees who sell maha, the devotees who keep the books, who write the letters. They're all performing this miracle. We're participating in the miracle, and we're performing the miracle. We're being saved by the miracle, and we're at the same time offering it to others. It's a very miraculous thing. It's a miracle. We're part of the miracle, we're performing, passing on, pursuing, and we're also trying to go for the full extent of the miracle, to actually enter into this loving relationship with the Supreme Lord. And Prabhupada never fell under the illusion that allowed us to believe that he was Krishna, that he was God. But he was godlike, and he reminded us, the dirty hippies, that cleanliness is next to godliness. Prabhupada was situated in transcendence, and he prepared to return to Krishna, as he prepared to return to Krishna's supreme abode. As you probably heard, the doctor who described the devotee said, an ordinary man afflicted with a disease that affected Prabhupada's liver would be constantly screaming in pain. And Prabhupada took no, narcotic medicines. Took nothing like that. So this is a godlike quality, this strength, this intense strength that Prabhupada had. But he wasn't playing God. He was demonstrating the power of Krishna for us. If we take shelter of Krishna, we can become like that. We can become godlike. Cleanliness is next to godliness, just that one quality, and you become next to God. So this is our business in Krishna consciousness. We're trying to enter again into a relationship with the Supreme Lord. And to do that, you have to become godlike. Of course, we are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. We're the same quality as the Supreme Lord, but not the quantity. Krishna is all pervasive. We were thinking about this the other day, how incredible it is that Krishna is maintaining so many things throughout the universe. And Radharani is maintaining so many things too. She's acting as Maya. She's, She's putting out so many different arrangements for each individual soul trapped in the material universe. Krishna's there with them as a super soul. This is incredible. This is just, you can't fathom how much he's doing. And yet he still has time for an individual relationship with each of us. He still has that time. He makes that time for us. So we're really fortunate. This is really incredible. That God is actually noticing me. He actually wants me to return to him. And the only price I have to pay is to become a little humble. Just become humble. And give up my pretension. So Prabhupada wanted to impart Krishna to us as one of us. Not as a mystic yogi. Not as a demigod come to put on a show. This was his mission to teach. And for this reason, it's so important that we follow his teachings. Srila Prabhupada's teachings are not arbitrary or just fortunate. I had the misconception when I was just becoming a devotee that Prabhupada was really amazing. He and I could have some very interesting conversations. It's very, very puffed up. And it's, as I say again, it's a miracle that I became a devotee. Still like that, but the idea is that I could not fathom how advanced, how incredibly advanced, how pure Srila Prabhupada was. Just I couldn't fathom. So he engaged persons like myself, children. He engaged us. He literally died teaching us how to live in this material world. In Dallas, Prabhupada said, there was an interview once, and Dallas said, in an interview, that there were different ways to travel by air, by pigeon, by vimana, by flying carpet. I remember one reporter asking Prabhupada why he didn't come in flying carpet why didn't he come on a flying carpet to ride to Dallas? Why did he come in an airplane? So Prabhupada's answer was, to be one with you. Everybody was very satisfied with his answer, to be one with you. So we all laughed, and the reporter was very pleased too, because she had something of interest. Yeah. So Prabhupada had this quality of humor. This is another godlike quality. Yes, Krishna is very humorous. If you read the pastimes of Krishna and Radha and the gopis and the coward boys, it's very humorous. They're playing jokes and tricks and having a wonderful time all the time. It's not a sour situation there. So when the same reporter asked about our dhoti, our dress, and the shaven head, first Prabhupada said, that's for cleanliness. We shave the head for cleanliness. And the woman, she had this huge head of teased hair. That was a style back then, you know, it's like a foot, like a double-sized football helmet or something. It's incredible. And so, and she also had on a very short skirt, extremely short. So Prabhupada said, better to have a warm legs and a cool head. And everyone loved it. It was just so funny. So we compare Prabhupada's willingness to be one with us with, where does this come from? Where does this desire to be one with us come from? I want to compare it with a story that was told recently. I don't know, is it Yasoda Dulal or Chinta Chaitanya, talking about Lord Chaitanya throwing away his book into the Ganges because it was disturbing to his classmate who had also written a book on the same topic. So after reading Nimai's book on the boat, they were passing over the Ganga. The friend was defeated and frustrated. And the Lord could see this. So originally, Nimai's school friend had been satisfied with his book. And so Nimai, in his pure humility, did not want to upstage him when they came to their class. So where does this quality of humility come from? Krishna has full and six opulences. Where does he say, where does it say that he has all humility? Which quality of Krishna engenders humility? Anybody know? Huh? Renunciation, exactly. So renunciation is the fountainhead of Krishna's humility. He's willing to allow living entities to do what they want, to some extent, as far as loving him goes. He allows us to play God here. We can love him or not love him. We can pretend that we're God here in the material world. But Krishna doesn't play God. He is God. Because God is perfectly renounced, he need not fear being humble. He has nothing to prove to anyone. He knows within himself, he's self-satisfied, and he knows who he is. And still he's wondering, how is it that I'm able to do this constant expansion? So God is amuses himself practically by his own great qualities. So it's so easy, I want to say, we're afraid to be humble. Afraid to bow to another devotee in terms of cooperating with their plan. It's very easy to pay obeisances and make a show of humility, but cooperative humility requires more than a bow or dandavats at someone's feet. Salesmen and thieves are so expert at the show, you know, so humble, so nice, they're expert at that. So we don't want to be like that. Prabhupada used to say, too much devotion denotes a thief. So we don't want to make a show of humility, but we do want to cooperate with the devotees. That's what Prabhupada's desire was, that we cooperate. So Krishna is not trying to attract us by showing off his prowess. His powers are wonderful, yes, they're perfectly wonderful, and they are attractive. But what's most attractive about Krishna is, first, the shelter that he offers. Yes, we all want to get out of this place of repeated birth and death. Go back to a safe place. And second, it's the love that he offers, unlimited love. Once we taste the love, we're not so much concerned with the shelter. So we're willing to actually, once we taste love, Krishna's love, we're willing to take chances and push ourselves for Krishna. And we all experience this with Srila Prabhupada, and you experience it with your leaders today, that we don't have to force ourselves to do things because we want to do things. They're just there. Things that we can do to please Krishna, they're there and we want to do them. It's exciting because we see the leaders doing the same thing. We see our leaders doing the same thing. So Krishna's attractiveness, it lies in making himself humble and vulnerable and so lovable. He's like this as a master or as a servant, as a friend, as a precious, precocious child, as a foolish lover who makes mistakes and has to be corrected by his lovers. Krishna is so, he's vulnerable in the sense that he's open to us. If we think, you know, Krishna is not disturbed so much because he has so many things going on. But if we can think how much it pains Krishna to see us lingering in this material world, in material consciousness, we could possibly try a little harder to become God conscious, become Krishna conscious, to serve him. So this is Krishna's attitude. It's all attractive to us. It allows us, why is it so attractive? Because it allows for reciprocation. Give and take, back and forth, exchange. As the Christians, I remember when I first went on Sankirtan, the Christians had these little tracts, and they were about this big, and they're full of little pages of, it's all like a size of a ticket, but it's full of pages stapled together. And in one of them they had a picture of God on the throne. He had no face, and he was just colossal, you know. And the people were under him were like about this big, walking around on the floor underneath him. So this is not reciprocation, unless you're really into awe and reverence. There's not much reciprocation there. So, but this is a concept. Unfortunately, they have no concept, no conception of God. God is a purely abstract concept for most religions. It's purely abstract. He's impersonal. He's a force. You have to love him. Because he's the force. You know? That movie, was it? May the force be with you. It was very funny, actually. But the idea is that we're not interested in Krishna as a force. We're interested in as a person, as a loving person that we can exchange love with. So, we asked the question, you know, if God's just an abstract concept for most religions, why isn't Krishna revealed to them? And the reason is the same reason he's only partly revealed to us. They still want to play God. They don't want to chant Krishna's names or see him in the temple or read about him. Krishna's in their hearts and in our hearts, encouraging surrender, but no, not now, not yet. I'll tell you when I want to see you again. That's our attitude. We're still hung up on not giving fully to Krishna, not fully surrendering. There's something there. You know, when you go to a psychiatrist, he tries to dig and dig. What is the problem? What's the real problem? Did you hate your mother? Did you hate your father? And goes deep, 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 trying to find out. It's kind of strange. But the fact is that deep, deep in our subconscious, there's this attitude, I could still maybe be God. I could still do it. I want to be Krishna. No, you can't. It's just, and the wonderful thing about Kalakanya and death is she proves it to us over and over and over again. So we want to try to get to the point where we stop, you know, having to have this lesson. You know, it's an embarrassment for a child if he's in the second grade, he doesn't graduate. He has to repeat the second grade again. So I remember my brother had to do that. It was a big embarrassment. He was a little young for his starting school, and it was just too much for him. So he repeated, then he went straight through, and no problem. But it's an embarrassment that we have to repeat. And we have to repeat not just one time, but over and over and over again. We have to come out of that. We have to break out of that. And the solution is our humble surrender to the Supreme Lord, giving him our volition, giving our volition, our free will, giving it back to him and saying, look, I don't know what to do. You make the arrangements. You take care of me, and I'll serve you. I'll simply serve you. That's going to be my objective. I'm not asking for anything anymore. So that's very nice if we can get to that stage, but that's what it will take. And unfortunately, most of us, myself I'm sure, will only take that position when I'm on my deathbed, waiting completely helpless. Oh, you take care of me, help me, I can't do anything now. It's kind of sad, but that's possibly what it takes. And that's why Krishna has arranged this system of repeated birth and death. Someone asked once, why can't we just all be, you know, happy, and you know, why can't the material world just be full of pleasure without Krishna? Well, Krishna, of course, is the all good. So if you separate yourself from the all good, there's going to be some bad. It's not going to be possible. Actually, Krishna gives that opportunity. When you come to the material world the first time, you're here you're on one of the higher planets, and all the Vedas are revealed to you. It's not like you born in some Christian or Muslim family, you don't know what's what, atheist family, you don't know what's what. But everything's revealed to you. Here's where you are, here's how you can stay here, performing some sacrifice, and here's how you can return back to where you were in the spiritual world. It's all laid out for you, very clearly. But the tendency is, as we know, become a little greedy for enjoyment, for sense enjoyment, separate from Krishna. And that causes us to fall, to tumble down, 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 past different levels of higher planets, down to the middle planet. And if we don't improve there, we get to go to the lower planets. So the opportunities are there. Krishna's made a system. And ultimately, the only bad things that are happening to this body, which is illusory. It's not the real self. It's an illusory self, a temporary self. And we've had so many of them. It's amazing. So, anyway, this opportunity is there, but the people don't want to take it. And I'll tell you when I'm ready. So, you know, we have a tendency to say, you gave me volition, Krishna, so let me use it. This is just an attitude. It's like a child's attitude, defiant to the parent. The parent's giving him everything, but the child defies the parent. So we play God, and we try to convince ourselves and everyone else that we are, in fact, God. Brunjan played. He played, and then his karma ran out. Kalakanya came to embrace him.
And Prabhupada, as Prabhupada said so many times, for the atheist, God is death. And everyone is an atheist in a sense. The people performing so many pious activities, they're praying to God, but give me this, give me this. God is not really the loving personality that they want to meet. God is someone who supplies stuff. That's all he is. So we don't have a loving exchange with the merchant at the store. We may become friendly over a period of years, but we don't have a loving exchange there because there always has to be some payment. And like this, people resent the payment. Isn't it amazing? Was it the story of the man who got some benediction from Durga, and then he promised her a goat, and then he reneged, he didn't give the goat. So then he said, well, how about a dog? You know, how about this? And finally he got down to a fly. He was going to offer a fly. So Durga was very accommodating. He said, yeah, okay, well, just give me a fly. But there are so many flies, you get your own. This is attitude. So we don't want to be on that barter thing, that barter exchange. So just as an aside, you know, we're talking about different bodies and so forth. I've written a movie about a book about someone having different bodies, different genders from one body, one birth to the next. There's an aside, a little ISKCON history. I was talking with a devotee named Laguti. Now he's 70 years old now, and he can work harder than a 25-year-old with three children. He's a very, very strong man. But in talking with him, being close to him, I started to realize, you know, that he's also old. He's also very concerned about maintaining the body into a lot of health things and so forth. This is all good, it's all well and good, but he's concerned. So anyway, he was telling me about Australia. This is kind of the humorous part of the class. It's a little bit different. Anyway, he was telling me about Australia. One year, 200 Brahmachari book distributors and 200 Brahmacharini book distributors, they all came to India for the festival. And they all came back to Australia and they were married. he said that was the end of book distribution for a while in Australia. I'm not sure this is all completely true. If there's any Australians here, you can correct me after the class. At any rate, so one might think that those marriages ruined book distribution, but no, the administration actually failed to see an opportunity. Just think if the administration had been enlightened and let those newly married people go out, distribute books, which they were very good at, and let those devotees simply keep all the money they collected minus the cost of the books and 20%. So they were giving me basically, you know, an 80% profit, or depending on how much they charge. So I was thinking, how many people in Australia would now have full sets of books and be chanting? And how many rich householders there would be from selling Prabhupada's books? But the administration was greedy, they fell apart, the damned householders, the hell with the grihasthas. So this attitude, you know, this down with this group, down with that group. Within our organization, this partisanship, I'm a brahmachari, I'm a man, I'm a woman, this partisanship is very detrimental. In America right now, the government is gridlocked because the Republicans and the Democrats, they're fighting constantly. They can't make any progress in the government. It's literally no bills are getting passed except the ones for defense. You know, the military budget, that's always passed. Anyway, my point is that ISKCON puts down women. That was Laguti's point. The Bhagavatam points out the faults in womankind. Prabhupada said they were less intelligent. He also said demigod worshippers were less intelligent. Actually, Krishna said that. And most college professors and their knowledge is stolen by illusion. And they were demoniac, and the scientists were atheistic. And he said a lot of things about people. The women, he said, who took to Krishna consciousness were most intelligent, and certainly more intelligent than the men who did not take shelter of Krishna in the holy name. But still, ISKCON has put them down, and is thus considered by many viewers of the society, inside and out, intent on keeping them down. So there's an irony, there's a great hypocrisy in this. One of the great hypocrisies of ISKCON. One, just one. All the men in ISKCON like the women. This is the hypocrisy. All the men in ISKCON like the women. The sannyasis like to talk to the women, have them cook for them, clean for them, iron for them, do books for them, sell books for them, travel with them. The brahmacharis like to talk to the women outside ISKCON until those women become devotees. But then they're free to ignore them, but not marry them. Unless it's a rakshasa marriage. The vanaprasas like to associate with women other than their wives, or if necessary, with the wife. The grihastas sometimes, yes, sometimes no, like to talk to women. If they're married, they don't like to talk too much. But other than that, the wife, they don't mind talking to them. So the point is that all the men in ISKCON like to talk to and hear the women and see the women, top to bottom, every tier. They all like it. So women, they should be giving classes regularly and taking more responsibility as a matter of a standard, you know, of standard day-to-day routine. Actually, they're doing so many things. If they don't do this, though, if they don't push themselves a bit and come forward to do these, make these classes and so forth. Otherwise, this hypocrisy, the double standard, it makes the whole ISKCON society not look, not only look bad, but it makes us feel bad. And some of the members, if some of the members feel bad in a family, then if they leave or become less encouraged, those who are the creators of such bad feelings are committing an offense. When Kalakanya comes, we all look bad. There's no discrimination between men's old age and women's old age. Both are repulsive. Now, I'm not saying that we should ignore the dangers of sex attraction or that there should be free mingling. I firmly believe in the segregation of men and women for the sake of sanity. As my sanity, as the women, they complain too much. However, if one, for one sex to discriminate against the other sex in a society that depends on full cooperation of its members, this is foolish and wasteful. The Prabhupada was asked how men and women should interact in offices while working together, and he said, "Please pass the salt. Please pass the salt." Many men just cooperate, but don't fraternize. Don't get chummy, don't get close. Just please pass the salt and tend to business. Now that doesn't mean that one gender controls the salt and the other goes without. You know, you have to pass it. So this is an administration problem, and not knowing how to manage devotee power, manpower and woman power. After a war, logicians, students, they study the mistakes of the losing and the winning side, how the losers lost, and how the winners could have won more easily with less casualties. I personally feel as ISKCON is losing time, slowing, lessening its gains on the front lines of preaching in India by not creating a kind of women's core, women's sankirtan party, women's ashram. I go out on the sankirtan party occasionally. Women, two women lead those parties. One party goes to villages and does Nagara Sankirtan, and the other village, the other party has a boat, takes a boat to these different places along the Ganga, distributes prasadam. Got a wonderful donation from one man. He's paying for all the prasadam for a year. It was like, last time we went out, there were like eight big tubs of prasadam. Amazing. So women are doing these things, so they should be given full rein, in a sense, to give class. This is like important. So there, another point of this is there's so many changes now in Indian business world, in its social world, where women play important roles. We had a woman prime minister here. We have a woman governor of Bengal now. But why are we not taking advantage of these changes? We use cars and cell phones and jet planes. But the women, we keep them in a bullock cart. You know, they only get a bullock cart. They don't get full facility. So Prabhupada's dire request was that we cooperate. It's the advantage of everyone to cooperate. That is what is beneficial about cooperation. Everyone who cooperates benefits. So ultimately it's up to the women to assert themselves, as some are doing. So Anicca Kishore is leading Hari Nam programs in the villages. Gatmika is working on the community management. Krishna Lalya is a member of several boards. She takes all the minutes, types up the minutes, keeps everything regulated. Lakshmi Priya is my doctor. She wants to open a hospital and a hospice. And she was a hospital administrator in China. It's a very important position. It's a very big position. Hundreds of people working under her. So women are running our schools. Devotee women have very open hearts and a wonderful service attitude. And they have to be humble in order to handle the whole situation here. They have to be humble. So they should be respected and they should be valued. In America, in the Native American tribes, they had the older women of the tribe select the chiefs. It's a fact. The older women would select the chiefs. And why? Because the leaders were selected by women because they knew the leaders, the potential leaders, from the time they were small children. And they could see from that very young age how they interacted with others. So anyway, that's enough talk about women. Any questions about old age? I'm like more of an authority on old age. So I had the opportunity to speak, I thought I'd speak out. I hope no one is offended. If you weren't offended, I'll probably catch you next time. So, Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Okay, Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, dhanyavads.